tit for tat measures, which we've seen now going on since basically 2018, coupled with the angry rhetoric, there's no end in sight.
Following a divided vote by its member states in October, the EU can now impose extra tariffs of up to 35.3% on electric vehicles, EVs, imported from China for the next 5 years. The vote follows moves by the US earlier in 2024 to raise tariffs on Chinese computer chips, EVs, clean energy technologies and metals imported from China, part of an ongoing series of measures from the countries in recent years in the US-China trade war. Raj Bala, Diversity and Inclusion Officer of the IBA International Trade and Customs Law Committee, and Brunason Distinguished Professor at the University of Kansas School of Law, assesses the state of the Sino-American trading relationship, the Chinese reaction to US tariffs, and why what we're seeing is decoupling rather than de-risking.
Today, US-China trade relations, and indeed the overall Sino-American trade relationship, is on a downward trajectory. The slope of that downward trajectory seems to be increasingly severely going downward, and the two sides seem to be going down that slope at an ever faster pace. Any Chinese reaction is to anything, whether it's Section 301 tariffs or to this, is basically a combination of fury and tit-for-tat measures. And so the only nuance is how angry is their rhetoric from usually from the Ministry of Commerce or the Foreign Ministry. There's subtle differences in the formulas that the spokespersons from the MOFCOM or the Foreign Ministry will give in terms of how truly upset they are. Likewise, when you look at the tit-for-tat retaliation, what will a Chinese do? Are they imposing reciprocal tariffs, or are they trying to curtail exports of something that the U.S. really needs, like maybe graphite, because China has is dominant in graphite refining. So they will try and hurt the U.S. and its allies in some kind of proportionate way. And this is why I started off by saying we're on this downward trajectory, because the tit for tat measures, which we've seen now going on since basically 2018, coupled with the angry rhetoric, there's no end in sight. And what it has produced is continued decoupling. I won't even use the term de-risking. It's decoupling the two sides. De-risking occurs by the two sides, one in particular who's catalyzed a measure, stepping back, stepping away, hedging against more involvement. If you want to de-risk your in foreign exchange from a depreciation in a currency, you hedge against it, or you hold a less of a position against in that currency. And it's the same kind of idea in trade. If you want to lessen the risk of your dependence, to use a real example from COVID, on PPE, personal protective equipment, face masks, then you don't import as much from China, and you find other sources of supply for that PPE equipment. And so you are, in moving away from that source, you are decoupling from that source. And we've seen that in many, many sectors. Now, it's not always easy to decouple if you're BMW and you want to sell in the market in China, which you do, and you've invested tens of billions of dollars in your factories there. You're less excited about decoupling. But on the other hand, if you're Apple, you've started making the highest end iPhones in India. And of course, Third countries like India and Vietnam have happily, if quietly, encouraged U.S. and other businesses to leave China.
Keith Rockwell, a senior research fellow at the Heinrich Foundation, an Asia-based philanthropic organization focused on mutually beneficial and sustainable global trade, considers the issue of Chinese overproduction, particularly in the context of international competition on green technology, and the significance of China's advantage in the EV sector.
Let's be very frank about this, they're overproducing. They produce more than half the world's steel. There's no market for it. They produce, according to some studies, they produce as much as 7, 8, 10 million more vehicles, electric vehicles, than they can sell in their domestic market. They are overproducing. They are facing some headwinds in terms of their domestic economy. And the fallback for them is to keep producing and then just dump the surplus on global markets. So we've seen this with solar panels. We've seen it with the electric vehicles. We've seen it with steel. And the response now is much more aggressive, particularly since the US and the EU have made big investments in green technology. And electric vehicles are a big part of that. So they do not want to see these investments become basically a failure because of a flood of much, much cheaper cars. And the problem that the EU and the US face is that on the one hand, the whole Inflation Reduction Act, the carbon border adjustment measure that the EU is putting in place and their Green Deal, these are all predicated on the notion that climate change needs to be addressed. And here come the Chinese with an electric vehicle they could sell for $10,000, which would make these things affordable for practically everyone. Problem with that is that it would put the domestic producers out of business. And on the electric vehicle side, particularly when it comes to the batteries that make up 30 to 40% of the value of these cars, the whole supply chain is rooted in China. And that goes from the mining of the essential raw materials like cobalt and manganese and lithium, down to the processing of these materials, down to the production of the actual batteries and the car itself. And you're talking about, 80% plus of this supply chain is located in China. And to turn that around is going to be very tricky, particularly since there is no way a single country can put these things together on their own. And with the view in the US as negative as it is with respect to trade, something's got to give. Are you not going to produce these things? How are you going to get these materials if you don't import them? There is this very strong argument to be made that if everyone were driving electric vehicles, it would be reducing carbon emissions in a big way. And if you can make a car available for $10,000 or less, you're going to find people in developing countries are going to buy these cars up. Of course, these countries need to have the infrastructure to support these kinds of cars, which at the moment they don't. But it's the future. And historically, when you close yourself off from competition, you tend to stifle innovation. And the car industry does not have a strong record of innovation in the last 50 years. And they've been protected big time.
Yeling Tan, professor of public policy at the Blavatnik School of Government at the University of Oxford, compares the respective approaches taken by the EU and the US to China, and explains what the trade war means for the fight against the climate crisis.
The comparison between the US and the EU on electric vehicles is really, really interesting, right? The EU takes a more company-specific approach and then comes up with a more curated tariff structure on these individual companies that still allows them a path to access to the European market and a path to profitability in the European market, right? So depending on the exact tariff imposed on these different brands, some of these brands are still going to find it profitable, even with the increased tariff, to export to the EU. And so it is, in a sense, a more moderated approach. At the same time, the EU has signaled that it is open to investment from Chinese electric vehicles companies, right? So there are joint venture investments, right, happening in various European countries in electric vehicle manufacturing, but also battery manufacturing, which means that Chinese technology is going to be transferred to European companies, and it's going to Chinese EV investment is going to create European jobs in this strategic sector. That's very different from the U.S. approach, which is to impose this prohibitive 100% tariff, right, which does not make a distinction between any of these different companies or their individual pricing structures, and is also closed to investment, right, with the exception of the Ford CATL battery joint venture, right? There's very little appetite in today's American Congress for any type of investment from Chinese EV companies. It will probably be seen as a security threat rather than a source of jobs or technology transfer. So the two approaches are very, very different, and I think driven by slightly different sets of strategic thinking around trade policy. The areas in which we would think that there are shared interests, right? Number one on that list should be climate change. Unfortunately, you know, the security concerns and economic nationalism as well have overshadowed and taken a higher place. That comes at a cost that I don't think policymakers have really thought through. In a sense, you know, you can get immediate political gain from imposing these tariffs, and then the cost that comes in terms of the climate transition, in terms of future generation, in terms of security risks that are generated by climate change, right? If we think about climate refugees and so on, extreme events that can cost lives, right? All of these are important social priorities, but all of these come at a later date. And so it's much easier to make the political calculation in favor of the immediate gain that you might get. And that's really, really unfortunate, because we can think about the electric vehicles, as you point out, as providing a really important solution, right? And the current discussion and the current narrative right now of the Chinese EVs that it's a case of excess capacity being dumped on world markets, right? Again, kind of this narrative that Chinese manufacturing is sort of imposing harm on the economies of China's trading partners. But this is a narrative that doesn't take the climate crisis into consideration.